Dr. Gregory Scott Sparrow, and I've been here at UTPA, UTRGV now, for about 11 years, 12 years. And I teach mainly in the LPC track, the courses that are associated with the skills-oriented, like marriage and family therapy, and group therapy, etc. I've been licensed since 1982, since probably before most of you were born. So I've been in private practice for quite a while. My specialty is dreams. I did my master's and doctoral work in dreams, and have used dream analysis every day of my practice since I was licensed in 82. Just a couple of hours ago, my last client I had was a 16-year-old autistic young man who had been bullied and is currently out of school because he couldn't adjust to the environment. And the administration was impatient with him, and finally he had to go to homeschooling. But he's been doing really well. He's working out now. He looks so different, so much more confident. And most of our hour was spent talking about the good news. And he just looks so different, really great. But at the end of the hour, toward the last 20 minutes, we always share dreams. I asked him, "Do you have any dreams?" He said, "I have two short ones." And the first one he shared was, "I'm in my house, in my bedroom, and there are dead roaches everywhere, just everywhere, scattered around. And I said, what do you feel? What do you feel when you see them?" He says, "Not much, nothing. They're all dead. I don't feel like they're a problem." So I'm thinking, you know, if I was his parent, I might want him to clean them up. Anyway, I didn't go there. And so he said, "You know, I think of them..." I didn't even ask him what they related to in his life. He made the connection himself. He said, "I think of them like the bullies and the people who put me down and didn't understand me. They're kind of like memories now that don't have any life. They don't bother me anymore to think about it." Great. He said, "I had another dream, though." He says, "I was outside and I saw an airliner flying by, and it started coming down like it was going to land. But it was pitched too steeply to land, and it hit the ground and exploded only a few feet from me." "What did you feel?" I said. He said, I felt afraid. These were just two snippets, right? Two little pieces of dreams that provided us an entry into a conversation we needed to have. First of all, about his success in putting behind him a lot of bad memories. But then the second dream, I said, "You know, I used to have a lot of dreams like that myself, and I didn't like them. And, you know, there's something there so beautiful and powerful, buoyant, floating, flying, and suddenly it comes crashing down." I said, "How are you relating to that right now? The loss of buoyancy, the loss of, you know, something that used to be sustainable." He said, 3 days ago, I really got depressed again. He said, "It just came over me." I said, "Oh." Now, we had not talked about this, 45 minutes, right? But the little piece of dream about the plane crashing provided him and I entry into a more serious conversation about the unfinished effect of all of that distress. So we talked about it a while and said, "You know, I wasn't suicidal, but nonetheless, it was very bleak. And it comes over me sometimes just out of nowhere." I said, "Yeah, just like a plane crashing, huh?" He said, "Yeah." So we talked about, you know, how you could imagine the plane not crashing, how you could imagine the plane gathering altitude again. Now, this is a technique we often use called dream reliving. This is something we do on the end of dream work, which is getting people to look at their nightmares as modifiable, as something they could imagine in a different way with a different ending. And research shows that this is a very effective way to help people who have PTSD heal the memory of trauma, is to actually get them to finish their dream in a different way in their imagination. But that's way at the end of dream analysis. I'm going to take you to the beginning and introduce you to some pretty simple methods that you can use right now in your work with students, you can play with friends. And if my friend Claridina, who else is going to be changing the slides for me. We know that all of you dream. How many of you remember dreaming fairly regularly? Uh-huh. Yep. You dream every night. for about an hour and a half. Not all at once, but broken up through the night in increasing amounts toward morning. And so everyone dreams about 90 minutes, and dreams, the function of dreams is very controversial. There's a lot of research, a lot of different theories, but mostly people agree that dreams provide an opportunity to put together unfinished business, to heal conflict, to review unfinished business, and also to project forward into your life new opportunities, things that are stressful, maybe not quite completely accepted yet. So there's an integrative function going on every night, helping you weave together the pieces of your sensory life, your emotional life, into a tapestry that is uniquely you. So we know that in dream sharing and therapy, this is what we know based on the research. It results in deeper work in the early stages of therapy. It produces superior outcomes than insight therapy, Rogerian, or, well, you haven't had too much theory yet, so I'll just say, compared to most traditional therapy, it seems to accelerate and deepen the process. It increases self-disclosure and exploration. This is when this young man shared with me the plane crash dream. It opened up the opportunity for him to talk about his lingering depression. It would not have been part of our conversation, most likely, unless the dream had provided that kind of metaphor, the kind of imagery that supported the conversation. Now, it's rarely used. Interestingly, most therapists don't use it. There are several studies that suggest that therapists either don't use it or their clients introduce it rather than the therapist actually asking the question. So there's several studies that for some reason, 92% of therapists said they work with dreams, but only 15% had worked with a dream in the previous year. Why? If they accelerate and deepen the therapeutic process, if they produce superior outcomes, why not? Okay, first one. Why do you think? Why do you think people don't work with dreams? Yeah, well, the first obvious thing is that our program and most PhD programs are lockstep. We have licensing boards waiting for you, right? We have the certification process waiting for you as school counselors. And those curricula, those protocols are very rigid, predefined. So our program is exactly the same, just about exactly the same as UTSA or any other university in Texas trying to get our students to be certified or licensed for both. There's not much wiggle room, is there, for electives. Elective? What's that? When I was in college, you know, you could take electives. And in undergraduate school, right, you can sign up for electives. And those are the opportunities for professors to teach innovative, off-the-table kind of things, like dream analysis. Now, there's also certain beliefs that most people carry around that aren't true. The dreams are difficult, they're mysterious, they're obscure. Actually, the research shows that dreams actually mirror waking life. It's called the continuity theory. Now, the things you dream about represent look a lot like your waking life as a rule. Yes, there's bizarreness and there's weirdness, but overall, there's a continuity between waking and sleep. Secondly, some people think, well, I've got to study symbology. I've got to master the interpretation of imagery. I've got to study mythology and depth psychology. No, not really. Dreams are pretty self-evident once you engage the dreamer in appropriate ways. And we're going to look at ways that you wade into the dream and unpack it without knowing a whole lot about, you know, esoteric studies such as symbology, without knowing a whole lot about the dreamer himself or herself. Also, there's the assumption that dreams are retrospective. You know, Sigmund Freud said all dreams refer backwards into your childhood, your traumatic or unresolved conflict with your parents. Everything points backwards. So we have this view coming forward from psychoanalysis, and you'll get into that in your study, that everything is about your childhood and not about the here and now. Nope. I mean, not according to research. That dreams mirror waking contemporary concerns as much as unfinished business. So it goes backwards in here and now and even forwards too. when it's trying to get you to anticipate cutting-edge issues for you, like, do you really want to be married? Do you really want to have kids? You know, what is your true calling in life? That type of thing. That comes out in James 2. Okay, so it's tempting to impose our hunches on a person's dreams. This is where everything goes south. You tell me a dream, or someone tells you tell somebody else a dream, and pretty soon they're trying to figure out what it means. But they've got to figure it out like it's a puzzle. And so people tend to project a lot of hunches into your dream without being very appropriate about that. It says more about them than it says about you. So contemporary approaches to dreams are very carefully, ethically designed to enable you as the counselor to be very vigorously involved in the process without invading the dreamer's integrity and final say on the meaning of the dream. Okay? Let's go to the next. So I'm going to introduce you to a five-step approach. It's fairly simple and easy to learn. It may not seem that way first, but I have a handout that you can take home with you and review it. Okay? So I'm going to, can somebody help me pass these out with you? Maybe a couple of people. This five-step method has developed over a period of about 40 years of my life. And the version I'm sharing with you today is pretty close to the one I teach advanced practitioners and certify them as dream workers, okay? It's a little bit different, a little more simpler, because I don't want to throw you in the deep water right yet. But it's very sophisticated and very effective. The full approach is called the five-star method. And if you want to read about it, you can read about it on my website at dreamanalysistraining.com. Now, the first step... Oh, yeah, there's the URL. You can't hardly tell what it is, but it's dreamanalysistraining.com. We're going to go into the dream, how you begin to elicit or solicit dream sharing in a way that's very evocative and effective. First, have the person share the dream in the first person present tense. I am walking down the street. I'm in my bedroom and I'm looking on the floor and I see roaches everywhere, dead roaches. The present tense first person is very evocative of feeling, isn't it? And when you as a counselor are listening to a dream that's shared in the first person, you get into it. It starts to affect you. You can feel it, right? And that's intentional. Fritz Perls, who was the founder of Gestalt Therapy many years ago, said this is the way to share dreams, because dreams aren't over. Dreams are alive. They're unfinished. And so when we share a dream in the present tense, all we're doing is we're reawakening the emotional intensity. We're allowing people into it, to make it their dream by vicariously experiencing it. And that's a good way for you as a dream worker to begin the work, because if you're on the same emotional level as the dreamer, if you can feel what he felt when he saw those disgusting dead roaches on the floor, then you're going to be able to communicate with him and have an effective conversation that's on the same level, rather than you being shooting all over the place with ideas that have nothing to do with his feelings or dreams. So the first person present tense is really important, and when you ask a person to share a dream in that first person present tense, you know what's going to happen, don't you? They're going to share it in the past tense. They'll slip into the past tense, and you have to hold on, come back, and you have to correct them a few times, and it seems a little awkward. You may not want to do that, because you don't like to be rude, right? You'll get over that by the time you finish the program. It has nothing to do with being rude. It means being effective, holding the dreamer to a way of sharing that's very powerful and evocative for him and for the dream helper. Okay, next step. Listen to the dream. This is still the first step, but it's part of the sharing and part of the communing with the dream. Listen to the dream as if it were your own dream. Identify with the dreamer and notice the feelings that you have. So you're using your own emotional connection with the dream as a way of starting to relate to the dreamer and what's going on in the dream. Number three, once the dreamer finishes, ask him or her to share their feelings about the dream. And if during the telling they share no emotions. You're describing something that probably should be emotional, like seeing ugly roaches. I stopped him in the middle and I said, well, what are you feeling when you see the roaches? If he doesn't tell me, I'm going to find out, because I want to know what the emotional process is going on, what it's like. Okay, next. Okay, now this is the hardest part. You're not quite getting to where you want to go yet. Where everybody wants to go is what? Where do you think people want to go immediately when you share a dream? What does it mean? Or what does that image mean, right? And so we're not going there yet. We're slowing ourselves down so that we actually develop a broader view of the dream before we launch into the content analysis or the imagery analysis. This step is it's so simple it's hard. You reduce the dream to a basic statement that has no specific images, names, or colors, or places. You use words like somewhere, something, somehow, okay? So examples are, someone is looking for something that she's lost and is unable to locate. Now that one statement can capture a dream that's a whole page long. The idea is to reduce it, to make it a succinct, generic statement. Why do you think we want to do that? Does anybody have an idea why this is a useful step? What do you think?
So that it is not so significant?
What's that?
So that it is not so significant?
Yeah. Okay. Like, exactly. Dreamers tend to be spellbound by the intensity of the drama, the plane crashing, for instance, okay? Or maybe it's a violence, another form of violence. And by reducing it to a generic statement, it takes that intensity, that kind of drama out of it so the dreamer can see the underlying theme. Dreams will exaggerate the point, like they're screaming at you to get you to see something, right? So it's going to be way over the top a lot of times. And if you don't reduce it to something generic like this, the dreamer's going to be focused on these very dramatic, upsetting, often upsetting situations, right? Another reason we do this is because it helps the dreamer see a pattern that can map onto their life. Maybe the pattern has nothing to do with roaches and nothing to do with planes crashing, but the pattern has to do with being unaffected by the presence of annoying things, okay? Someone sees some annoying things that don't affect them because they no longer have any power over them. They no longer have any life to them. See how that captures a pattern that has nothing to do with the specific imagery in the dream? No roaches? It's about a pattern. Or someone sees something that was doing fine up to a point and then suddenly lost its what? Lost its... We want to try to be very generic and not be too specific, because we want the dreamer to see the pattern, not the content. It's a very interesting approach. Sometimes this is all the dreamer needs to see before they say, oh my gosh, I know what this dream is. And you don't have to go any further. So this is called the theme, the dream theme, okay? And usually it takes one or two sentences to summarize the dream. Maybe more, but you try to bring it down to the very short statement with no specific images, names, places, okay? The more general you can be, the better. A third step. Okay, this is where we get into what everybody wants to get into, right? The analysis of the imagery. One thing we want to get away from, okay, this is the thing to try to, you know, have one of those circles with the X through it, or the, is that dream imagery is literal. The other night in class, some of you were in the class here from Brownsville, a woman shared a dream about going to her grave. Remember that? She was with her sons. She goes down into a crypt or a cave or a grave, and she's there with her sons waiting, expectantly, feeling hopeful. She wakes up and says, wow, my grave? Am I going to die? So there's a tendency when people hear that dream or have a dream, they go, oh my gosh, maybe I have cancer, right? But dreams, once again, will exaggerate to make a point. And dreams use imagery metaphorically. It's So instead of death being literal, death becomes a metaphor of dramatic change, of a beginning and an ending, right? So that it gets her attention, doesn't it? It really dramatizes the fact that this woman has three new developments, a new house, help me here, new relationship, and a new job or a different job or something like that. I remember it was like she had one of these across-the-board life changes. And you can see why her dream would put it in terms of life and death, or the end and the beginning. But the neat thing about it is that she was hopeful. She wasn't afraid. She wasn't resisting change like all of us, well, most of us do up to a certain point. So let's go back to the actual steps. There's really three ways to get into imagery. One is really an interview process called amplification. You simply ask the dreamer, tell me about roaches. Tell me about crashing planes. What are your associations with roaches? And so the dreamer says, well, you know, we've had a problem in our house, and we had to fumigate, and we finally got on top of the problem. Okay, tell me more about roaches. What do you like about roaches? Well, I guess because they're such survivors, you know? The rest of us can die and they'll still be here, you know? Okay, it's about surviving. It's about, you know, being tough. What do you dislike about roaches? Well, you know, they're just dirty and everywhere and I can't get rid of them. So this is a kind of personal association that you need to solicit from the dreamer, because otherwise you're not going to know all of this and you're going to project your own associations into that imagery. Maybe your association with roaches is much different, okay? And you don't need to make it about you, right? You want to make it about the dreamer. So amplification is very simple. Tell me about John. What do you like about the guy in your dream? What do you not like about him? You know, what's he good for? And so you find out why the dream has employed these images, specifically for the dream review. The next one is based on the idea that every time you dream about a character, he or she is a part of you. So if you dream about a woman who had a client who dreamt, she was in group therapy, and she dreamt that a blonde, tall woman came into the group, and she thought she was going to have to kill this woman because she was a threat to her. So they did hand-to-hand combat in the dream before she actually did her in and woke up. Well, you know, she was an intellectual. She was in a marriage where her husband had cheated on her. She didn't feel that she was very attractive. And so this blonde woman represented her kind of alter ego, if you will. You know, everything she wasn't. So it was very hard for her to say, that's a part of me. Not really, but this is the kind of thing that dreams do. They bring these characters that seem so different and threatening at times. And in order to really build emotional and psychological health, we really have to say, this person in my dream is an aspect of myself that maybe I'm not relating to very well. You know, somebody that threatens me. I need to own it. I need to embrace and learn something about. So the aspects of self, or parts of self-analysis, sometimes is an easy thing to do, and sometimes it's very tough, because that person may be a cartel member or somebody who seems so extremely different and unacceptable to you that you don't want to say that's part of you. Other times, you know, you see somebody in the dream and you say, well, that's a part of me that I can relate to. But it's a really good exercise to put every character in the dream on the level of reflecting something within yourself that you haven't completely owned or integrated yet. Even the non-human, inhuman images can be representative of parts of self. The airplane crashing. Okay, this kid could very easily relate to the fact that the airplane crashing was himself. I'm airplane crashing. I'm losing my buoyancy. I'm not making a soft landing right now. Now, the next way to look at imagery is through metaphor. This goes back to the death dream. Looking at death and looking at events in the dream, not as literal, but is reflective of qualities within your own life. So you may dream of a butterfly coming out of a chrysalis and getting stuck. Have you ever seen that in real life, where you're trying to get out and would love to help them, but their wings are caught, and you wonder, all that work, and they're dying, tragically. So these kind of images are picked up by the unconscious and used to demonstrate, dramatize qualities in your life. Can anybody relate to a metaphor that they've had recently in a dream? That obviously wasn't literal, but captured a quality about their life at the time? Crystal, you had a dream a couple of years. Melissa?
Well, I'll share something personal with you.
Can you speak up so everybody can hear you?
I'll share something personal with you. I actually, I had a dream not so long ago, and
You're like me. They can't hear you.
Okay. Well, I'll be bold enough to share. I do divide this a lot, and I do play a lot. And I actually had a dream. Well, first I'll tell you this. I happened to find a little note. I was purchasing something, and I found a little note that said, God loves you. And about 2 weeks later, I was deep in sleep, and since I read the Bible a lot, I actually saw a bright light come, and I saw where I was reading, like, the text in the Bible, which is the highlighted in white, and the black bold letters come out, and the light grew bright, and it said, God loves you.
Yeah.
And so I woke up. I literally woke up and I felt chills all over. And I kind of got a little scared, but I actually felt peace afterwards, knowing I have that bond, my relationship with God, you know? And then afterwards, I felt a sense of peace. And so I've never shared that with anyone. So because you're bringing that up, that's why I think it's, you know, it's kind of befitting,
yeah.
You know?
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Well, this really illustrates the fact that people will share dreams with you that you don't need to analyze, okay? Not everything needs to be interpreted. Sometimes it needs to be celebrated. And your clients, your students, will bring dreams like this. They haven't shared with anybody, and they're sacred moments in their life, right? By listening well and celebrating them, we help to ratify and support that realization. So be on the lookout for dreams that you don't need to talk about, and you just need to listen to and feel. And celebrate. Okay? Thank you. Yeah.
What do you think about dreams for this dream? Like, I dreamt about my grandma's death and it happened exactly right now.
Yeah. Right.
So what do you feel about those dreams?
I think such dreams, just to cut right to the chase, I've had many people say, why did I dream this? I didn't want to know about her death. I mean, you know, it was bad enough having it happen and then knowing it was going to happen. Well, I often say to them, it seems to me that it may have been preparing you to be more ready and more available to others and to deal with it in a more creative and loving way. Maybe it was kind of getting ready. Even though we don't want to know about it, you know, you probably, there's no way to know what it would have been like if you hadn't had the dream ahead of time, right? You may have been a lot more thrown off, a lot less available to the people around you. So I tend to think of dreams as a gift. I mean, you know, if we see death as a terrible thing, well, obviously it's not going to be a gift, but if we see death as a normal, natural process that happens to our loved ones and we want to be ready for it, we want to be present, fully present, then it is a gift, isn't it, to have that foreknowledge. And of course, there are times when you can tell people things that may help them too, but those are rare. Usually the dreams are for us to get us ready. Do you think that's true for you? Wow, solid
back. Exactly. Back in time, it was a Saturday morning when I dreamt it. Like in the 4 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, the next Saturday would happen around that same time and I had that phone call. So that was just an understanding.
Yeah. It really says there's something else going on, isn't there, when you have this kind of dream, something, some bigger plan, or has a way of really supporting a spiritual life, and you have that kind of foreknowledge, huh? Okay. Fourth step. Oh, this is really big. This is kind of this is what I worked on for many, many years. This is kind of new, all right? Very new, but The idea that dream analysis doesn't just involve the imagery, the out there in the dream, but it also involves the dreamer's response to it. The dream is about a relationship between the dreamer and some kind of issue that's coming up. It's kind of like any life experience, like being here right now. You know, I could be anxious and upset about having to do this because I'd rather be home, you know, sitting in front of the TV or something. Or I can see this as an opportunity. I can see this as an exciting opportunity. The response the dreamer makes to the dream tells us a lot about his or her response to life. So when I ask the young man about his response to the roaches, I half expected him to be kind of obsessive and worried, and for him to say, no problem, you know, I'm not bothered. And you could see in his eyes the fact he's come a long way from the time he was bullied, long way from the time he'd sit in my office and look haunted, okay? So his response to the dream mirrors quite accurately his confidence in the waking state. And usually you will see a very direct relationship between the way the dreamer is reacting to a situation in the dream and the way they're reacting to a situation in the waking state. And sometimes it's the reaction that tells you more about the dream than the dream content. Let me give you an example. A friend of mine who, at the age of 19, came to me. We were both real young, and we were both kind of getting into dreams. And she said, I had this dream about a UFO coming to destroy the world. That I saw this flame coming out of the bottom of them, and I was terrified, and I started running. I ran into my parents' house and into my old bedroom and crawled under the bed and woke up terrified. And she said, what do you think the dream was warning me about? And I thought, I'm not sure that's the right question. You know, even then I was starting to think that maybe she was asking the wrong question. Another person told me almost exactly the same dream. Now, to a point, he dreamt that he was in his parents' house. He looked out the window, and UFOs were coming to destroy the world, he thought. Everybody was panicking. His parents were packing the bags and getting everybody in the car so that they could go somewhere else. And at that moment, instead of running with them, he said to himself, well, if they're going to destroy the world, there's no place to hide, right? And then he said, I wonder what would happen if they knew that people on Earth were spiritual, that we weren't just, you know, heathens or whatever. So he closed his eyes and he prayed and meditated and he tried to tune into them. And he opened his eyes in the dream and the UFOs had stopped spewing fire. They were just hovering. Next thing he knew, he was walking on a beach to the UFOs that had landed, and these beings were coming out, these tall, 8-foot tall beings in orange robes and shaved heads, and they were welcoming everybody with open arms. What's the difference between those two dreams? What is the difference?
Their approach.
Their approach, who said that? Their approach, right, their response. Up to a certain point, the dreams are exactly the same. As if to say, here is a test of you. Here is a challenge. How are you going to deal with this? These dreams are often like this. They're like a test. How are you going to deal with this? Now, to tell you something about the first dreamer, she is now a Methodist district superintendent, a very well-known pastor in Central Texas, well-loved, very, very charismatic. But when she was 19, she felt the call to be a minister, but she was terrified by the possibility that God would send her somewhere, like to Africa or some third world country. And she wouldn't have any control over her life, and she'd be, you know, destroyed by that. You could see, had the UFO with the fire, in retrospect, represented her higher power, the power of that changing your life so much that she would be perhaps destroyed or possible. So, the dreamer's response is very telling, isn't it? Okay. So we don't want to skip that. We want to ask the dreamer, you know, where did you respond? Where did you react? What would you have preferred to do differently? This is a really important question. Are you happy with your response? Are you happy with what it brought about in the dream? Because the dreamer's response sets the dream along a different track. Just as the UFO dream, right? I mean, the dreamer's response determine whether the ending was terrible and terrifying or whether it was a wonderful reunion. And so we want the dreamer to understand that the dream is set up not to have an ending from the beginning, but it's like any relationship. It develops over time through our interaction, through our relationship. So it's a very powerful thing to do, is to analyze the dreamer's response. Okay, fifth step. Okay, we're getting down to the finish. Applying the dream work. Help the dreamer find where the dreamer late in her life, and then have the dreamer describe how he or she can apply the understanding that has emerged. That is, does the dream highlight a problematic situation where a new response could be practiced? Or does the dream highlight an opportunity that dreamer can choose to pursue? Now, in the case of the woman who went down into the crypt and waited for her own presumed death with her son, there wasn't a whole lot that she needed to do because she was already waiting, already open and expectant to the big changes in her life. Now, if she reacted, like the dreamer with the UFOs, if she reacted by running away from that opportunity, then we would have probably had to look at that. How can you welcome the changes in your life more openly instead of being afraid and assuming the worst? But when dreamers respond well to the dream, it becomes a centerpiece in their life, a centerpiece for how they could take the dream response into the waking state and actually grow from it. So we do focus a lot on action in the last stage, not so much meaning but action. How do you apply this? And okay, so we're going to take a look at a sample dream and go through it together, okay? If you could go to the next step, please, Curtis. How are we doing? 5:50, okay. We'll go to about 6:15, all right, and then have a few questions, and then we'll go. Okay, this is a very important thing. I talked before about being careful about making suggestions about what a dream means. We want to avoid those kinds of impositions. These are called projections. When you say, I think your dream means X, we're often loading it with our own history, our own assumptions, our own fears. And so we can't avoid that. We can't avoid in discussing something as mysterious as a dream, importing our own assumptions, right? And sometimes those assumptions are very useful. So projections aren't necessarily bad, it's just that we need to qualify them. We need to be able to say to the person, look, what I'm about to say to you might be helpful, but it's about me, okay? So we use the phrase, if it were my dream. If your dream were my dream, I think it would mean, I think it would relate to this or that. And that qualification is being used a lot today in contemporary dream work to not ensure, I mean, it's not a guarantee that you're not going to just dump on the dreamer just because you say it, but at least it lets the dreamer know, hey, I'm not sure about this, and I'm not trying to tell you what this should mean to you. I'm just saying what it means to me. And this is a very rich and messy and imperfect process where we acknowledge that part of the therapeutic process and individual work and group work too is the dream workers are sharing their own hunches, okay? So it is part of the larger picture for the dreamer to get in touch with. Okay, let's go to the next one. This is a pretty typical dream, I think, of a young man who said this. I'm a soldier, and I have to go to war, but I don't want to go. And they hoisted up a steep incline. In fact, he said they were like with ropes, pulled up a wall almost to a high place where we can be seen by the enemy, but also we can see the enemy. So it's like a plus and a minus. As we prepare for battle, I look out to the north over lakes and woods toward the place where the enemy's encamped. Suddenly I hear a roar and I know that a missile has been fired on us. I run down a stairway into a dark cave or stairwell where there are a couple of women whose faces I can barely make out. There's a huge explosion above me and I think that everyone must have died. But when I climb the stairs to access the damage, I find that no one has been killed. Good news. We resume our visiting and a sense of camaraderie prevails. Then a man gives me a t-shirt with the troop's name on it. I ask him how much it costs, and he says that it's free, but that if I want to leave a donation that will help others afford one, that would be fine. So I leave $10, which I know is the normal price of the shirt, and feel good about it. Like, oh my gosh, what do you do, right? Somebody tells you that? Can you imagine? What would you feel if somebody just told you that right off the bat? Would you feel confident that you could work with them? What do you think? Have I given you any indication that maybe you could at this point? What we want to do is start going through those steps, okay? What I say to myself when a person tells me a dream is I don't have to know anything. All I need to do is proceed in a disciplined way through the steps that I know are very effective for the dreamer. And I know we're going to get somewhere, but I don't know where we're going. So you can just say that to yourself. I don't have to know anything. I just have to be disciplined and present for the dreamer. So what do? We go into the next step, the first step. We've already listened to it. Is there another slide after this
one? I don't know.
Okay. So the feelings that we have when this dream is read, I listed these. These are what I think the dreamer felt and I felt when I heard it. At first, he's resistant. He doesn't want to go into this conflict. Then he has a sense of connection with the soldiers. And then there's this explosion, this attack. He's fearful, and then he's relieved that nobody's died. And then he has a sense of generosity. You're given something, you're giving other people things. All right, so you want to go through and make sure you exhaust the feelings. Make sure that you and the dreamer list everything that came up. Step two, the theme. Okay, this is what we came up with. Someone is unwillingly or begrudgingly or whatever you say it, resists involvement in a conflict that seems to put him at risk. He becomes aware of an attack that he believes will result in destruction and takes steps to avoid it, only to find that it has a minimal impact. Then someone gives him something that he in turn gives to others. So when we broke this into a theme, he was able to relate, immediately start to relate it to his work situation where he was having a lot of conflict with his supervisor. He didn't see it at first, but when he did the theme, when he heard he becomes aware of an attack and believes it will result in destruction and takes steps to avoid it only to find it doesn't have much impact, he said that he thought he was going to lose his job because he thought he'd kind of overdone stepping up and confronting the supervisor with what he thought was the wrong approach. And there was a reaction, he said, but it didn't do him in. It didn't really result in anything terrible. And then, okay, let's go to the next step. So we amplify the dream. We ask the dreamer, what are your associations with war? And you can imagine that he might say something like this. War is sometimes necessary, sometimes not. War victimizes innocent people. War brings people together in common cause. War is a win-lose proposition. Someone has to lose. So all these associations could be part of any dreamer's range of responses. But they're unique. They're personal, okay? They're not about what war means in some objective universal sense, but about what war means to him. So parts of self. He couldn't really identify with the other characters except the women in the dark stairwell, who seem to represent the parts of himself who are already safe, who are already hiding, already kind of in a more protected place. He also said, I didn't put this on there, the man who gave him the shirt, he thought represented a part of himself who already knew that he'd done a good job, already knew that he was going to be okay, and was celebrating the accomplishment of making it through this conflict, even though he was feeling raw and doubtful still. And then he realized that when he gave the money back, he was essentially being an example to the people by standing up to the conflict. See how that starts to come out? He said, you know, I've got commendation for my my courage, and now I want to help others have the same sense of support. Okay, step four. So metaphorical, non-literal analysis of the imagery. He felt that war was a general sense of conflict with others that he'd been experiencing at work. The missile seemed to represent the perceived threat from others, especially his supervisor. And the T-shirt seemed to capture the sense of success from making it through the ordeal. All right, next. So the dreamer's responses were very useful to analyze, too. Think about this. The dreamer realized that his resistance to going to war was problematic. He wasn't really going into it willingly. He often avoids conflict, he says. He doesn't want to deal with people who are upset with him. Of course, most of us don't. The dreamer realized that he overreacted to the incoming missile, thinking that it was more powerful than it really was. He said he tends to catastrophize when conflict arises, assuming that others will hurt him or win. Or yes?
Do you mean his response within the dream, or after he read the dream aloud, his response to the dream?
Well, he was analyzing his own responses within the dream and realized that he had overreacted to the incoming missile, but immediately was able to relate that to his tendency to overreact to conflict and think the worst, that he doesn't have any power to make a difference, that it's going to be worse than it is. So we're kind of going back and forth, right, from the response in the dream to the way he's responding to his waking state parallel situation. Okay, so we're getting to the end here. Step five, the dreamer decided to embrace the conflict at work as a meaningful and necessary part of his professional life. He said that he needs to approach conflict with less expectancy of something terrible happening. He said he would look for signs of success, such as the T-shirt symbolized, that others can benefit from. And then by leaving the money, he felt he was no longer fighting just for himself, but for other people who could benefit, his co-workers who could benefit from his example. You see how this dream really just maps completely onto his waking life? Does it become a very difficult process if we approach it in a step-by-step discipline that way?